on this fourth day of October, 2011, in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 4, entitled Transcendental Knowledge, text number 25. Andaivame vapare yagyam yogina paryupasate brahmagnavapare yagyam yagye naivopajuvati. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. Purport. As described above, a person engaged in discharging duties in Krishna consciousness is also called a perfect yogi or a first-class mystic. But there are others also who perform similar sacrifices in the worship of demigods, and still others who sacrifice to the Supreme Brahman or the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord. So there are different kinds of sacrifices in terms of different categories. Such different categories of sacrifice by different types of performers only superficially demark varieties of sacrifice. Factually, sacrifice means to satisfy the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is also known as Jagya. All the different varieties of sacrifice can be placed within two primary divisions, namely sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. Those who are in Krishna consciousness sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary material happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy demigods such as Indra, the sun god, etc. And others who are impersonalists sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of the impersonal Brahman. The demigods are powerful living entities appointed by the Supreme Lord for the maintenance and supervision of all material functions, like the heating, watering, and lighting of the universe. Those who are interested in material benefits worship the demigods by various sacrifices according to the Vedic rituals. They are called bhav-ishvara-vadi, or believers in many gods. But others who worship the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth and regard the forms of the demigods as temporary sacrifice their individual selves in the supreme fire and thus end their individual existences by merging into the supreme fire and, into the existence of the supreme. Such impersonalists sacrifice their time in philosophical speculation to understand the transcendental nature of the supreme. In other words, the fruitive workers sacrifice their material possessions for material enjoyment, whereas the impersonalist sacrifices his material designations with a view to merging into the existence of the supreme. For the impersonalist, the fire altar of sacrifice is the Supreme Brahman, and the offering is the self being consumed by the fire of Brahman. The Krishna conscious person, like Arjuna, however, sacrifices everything for the satisfaction of Krishna, and thus all his material possessions as well as his own self, everything, is sacrificed for Krishna. Thus he is the first class yogi, but he does not lose his individual existence. Now I have the distinct sense that we read this before. In any case, no harm done. Home Gyanat Mirandasya Gyanandana Shalakya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So Krishna is beginning a description of different kinds of sacrifices performed by different kinds of sacrificers for different goals. Again, the principle of sacrifice is universal. Everyone's sacrificing for some goal. Someone goes to college, they sacrifice money in the tuition, they sacrifice time, nervous energy, so many things in order to get the degree so that they get a good job or they get respectability in society, all these different things. So there's a goal and then there's a process of sacrifice toward it. Now, there is interesting and illuminating relationships between the concept of sacrifice or yajna and dharma and yoga. All these things are related. Dharma, for instance, is also a system of religion, a system of practice, do's and don'ts by which one follows a certain path, hopefully toward elevation. Dharma is sometimes translated as religion, sometimes as religiosity. The difference between real religion and religiosity is that religiosity is posing as real religion, but it isn't. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is kind of postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada would often say the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with a Bhagavad Gita ends. Bhagavad Gita ends with, just surrender unto me. Sarva Dharma Puritjajam Mame Kam Charanam Braja. One pointedly, surrender unto me alone, everything will be taken care of. Give up all Dharma. Sarva Dharma Puritjajam. Of course, surrender unto Krishna itself is the ultimate Dharma. But what he's saying is there, the Varnashram Dharma, the Swadharma, any so-called Dharma that is tinged with material desire, that you give up. And you simply surrender unto me, I will provide everything, I will relieve you of all sin-free actions. Finished. And Arjuna did that. He gave up his sense of intimate relationship with his family and his teacher and his friends and relatives on the other side, which were, to him, that was the most important thing at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. More important than the kingdom. More important than his honor as the greatest fighter was that he wouldn't be involved in killing these revered souls and beloved souls. He gave that up, that sacrifice. He sacrificed that conception of himself, because this is the ultimate, you know, the bottom line, is that we have to change the false sense of self that we have. And then we have a clear path. We know how to act on the basis of the true self. So the false self is based on this body. You know, how old we are, the gender, the place we live, the language we speak, all the things that are adhere to our birth in this lifetime. But that has a beginning, and it has an end. But we as spirit are eternal. So clearly, whatever identity we have based on the body or its relationships cannot be the real identity of the soul. And that's kind of the first lesson of Krishna consciousness. If we want to know what real dharma is, what real yoga is, what real jagya or sacrifice is, then first we have to understand who we are, really, and what is our actual goal in life. What is the real need of the soul, the necessity that we have? So, Bhagavatam begins from that point of surrender, and therefore the second verse of the whole Bhagavatam says, Dharma Projita Kaita Votra, that in this Bhagavat Purana, we're kicking out. Projita means to reject thoroughly, fully and entirely, cheating religions, cheating dharma, kaitava dharma. What is that dharma? That's the religiosity. That is religion or activity that is said to be in relation to God, but is really based on a personal motivation, a motivation rooted in our own physical or mental needs or wants. That, not our spiritual ones, but the needs of the body or the needs of the mind, you know. That's called religiosity. So Krishna is going to come to the ultimate point here at the end of and all along the way, you know, he also defines it. But the real bottom line is at the end of the 18th chapter where he says, okay, all that I've spoken to you now, this is the essence of it, the most confidential knowledge. This is all you really need to take away from this Bhagavad Gita. Think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and bow down to me. This is all you need to do, and then you'll come to me. I promise you, you're my very dear friend. Give all other dharmas, surrender unto me in this way, and you'll be relieved of all sin. Your life will be completely auspicious. You come back to me. And all of these different identities we've had, millions and millions of them, based on our entrapment in different kinds of bodies according to the modes of nature, that we've different combinations, that will all be forgotten as a bad dream. That will all be forgotten as a bad dream. Is it? Hare Krishna. All right, so back to our definitions of different yajnas now. So yajna means sacrifice. Now everything, all of these practices, dharma, yoga, yajna, dana is charity, they all have a central point of reference. And that is that you're denying your immediate needs, somehow, that your kind of visceral needs, you know, and you're sacrificing something, you're doing something that may be a little painful, a little difficult, for a higher end. You give dana, charity. It's a kind of sacrifice, right? You give money, you give a bag of rice, whatever it may be. So you're giving something up that you could use for yourself. Why? For a higher purpose. For the pleasure of the Lord, maybe so that you'll get something back, you'll get blessings, you know. But you're giving something up. Some dharma involves do's and don'ts. You're not acting according to your whims. You're acting according to the rules of Shastra for a higher goal. Now, there's different kinds of dharmas. As I say, they all involve some discipline. Those that are motivated by material desire are ultimately self-defeating. So the highest dharma is this Sanatana dharma, is the actual dharma of the soul. Sanatana means eternal, right? So the only eternal dharma of the soul is pure devotional service to Krishna. It's not bound by this body. It's not bound by time. That is what we're trying to realize in our Krishna consciousness. So back to our verse here. So now he's going, Daivameva. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by different sacrifices to them. So this is a sacrifice of what? Of time, of money, or something of value. And the goal may be going to the heavenly planets. Others sacrifice in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. Now, this is the impersonalists. What do they sacrifice? A lot. If you want to join up, Shankaracharya's line, you want to join one of the mutts or the monasteries, say in Kashi, Benares, and you want to attain liberation. Oh, that's so difficult. First of all, you have to be completely brahmachari. You know, I don't think there are any ladies allowed. You know, totally. And you completely celibate, study all day Vedanta Sutra, you know. I mean, I remember, the last time I had to study a lot in the discipline was when I was in high school, how difficult that was. So imagine just that's all you do, you know, no parties, no sports, no TV, no internet, just study. And what are you studying? You're not studying Krishna Leela. You're not studying the nectarian, you know, descriptions of Lord Chaitanya and his pastimes. No, it's only philosophy. You know, the difference between matter and spirit and Brahman and this, very dry. It can become very dry. That is a sacrifice. And in the fire, you know, but then you have to be very disciplined, very strong-willed in order to go through it. And ultimately, what do you get? What's the goal? There's always a goal. You know, no one sacrifices just to keep sacrificing. What are the goal is? Freedom, liberation. Freedom from birth and death, suffering. That's a big deal. Threefold miseries, you know. Let's count the waves, you know. This throat. I have a chronic problem now, I get chronic bronchitis. It gets a little cold. Okay, I can't speak. All right, big deal. I can tolerate, you know. But what about some really serious disease that may come? You know, it's always nagging at you, weakening you, draining your bank account. You can't do what you used to do. Old age comes. Everybody goes through it. No one's going to escape. And then again and again, then death, you know, the abyss. What's going to happen? All that pain and suffering. And then in between, threefold miseries, all of a sudden, we're sitting here, you know. I mean, this is San Diego, Southern California. I've been here 22 years. We've had a few earthquakes. Okay. I remember one, I was upstairs, and suddenly you feel like you're surfing. These chandeliers are going back and forth like this. You know, go outside, and sidewalk, same thing. It was up in Joshua Tree, 94, I think it was. Nobody was hurt because it's desert out there. It's pretty big, 7.5 something, you know. Okay, what's up the road here? San Onofre. You know, after the Fukushima in Japan, everybody started to think, well, what's that? You realize how much radioactivity is there? It has to be cooled all the time. Otherwise, it explodes and this city becomes uninhabitable. Anytime, it can happen. 9.5, you know, right out here, earthquake. May happen. I don't want to scare anybody, but that's life in the material world. It's called an adi-daivic misery. It's by the natural forces. You want it a little slower? How about drought, flood, global warming? We know it's a huge list. So now to be free of all that, great, let's do it. So that's the impersonalist, that's sacrificing in the fire of Supreme Brahman. All right, a little bit of pain for a few years, you know, no sense gratification, just discipline, I'm not that, spirit, pure spirit, I'm just... And then at the end, you leave the body, and you merge into Brahman. I'm spirit, he's spirit, aham brahmasmi, that's it, I exist, that's all, cool. No pain, absolutely no suffering. I just exist pure. It's called Brahmananda. There's an Ananda there. Fine. But you can't stay there. Because it's still unnatural. The spirit soul is a person. We have a rupa. We have a form. Jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas. This is Lord Chaitanya's statement. He says the real swarup, that's a form, means the real nature, constitutional position of every living entity is to be an eternal servant of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam defines liberation. This is mukti after all. Muktir hitva anyata rupam swarupena vavastati. Very nice definition. Real liberation means to give up our identification with these other rupas, namely this one and all the other bodies we've had, and to be situated eternally in our swarup, which Lord Chaitanya, Krishna has explained, is an eternal servant of Krishna. That can go on eternally. If you're at every moment experiencing an ocean of happiness in varieties, ever-fresh varieties of loving exchange with the supreme lovable person in an environment saturated with, you know, other blissful devotees, that I can see going on eternally. Not just I am that I am and I'm not suffering. Great. You know? It's like someone in the hospital, right? He's suffering like anything. And what are you thinking about? Oh, if I could only get, say you get an accident, my leg is broken, if I could just get back to where I was normally, if I could just walk again, you know, if I could just get rid of this disease and get back. So then, you know, by the miracles of modern medicine, okay, you get cured and you walk out of the hospital and you're pretty much back to normal. Oh, what a wonderful day, you know. Then what? Is that it? That's it for your life? I'm now cured. No, then you go on with your life. So getting rid of the suffering is not real life. That just brings you up to the zero point. Now the positive happiness is there in Krishna Bhakti. So this kind of sacrifice in and of itself, is not, doesn't assure you of achieving the ultimate goal. It may assure you of achieving the goal of the sacrifice, but that goal and that sacrifice may not be ultimately transcendental. And that's what Krishna's supplying here. He's giving us descriptions of different kinds of sacrifice. And ultimately he will say, if you remember the chapter 10, I am a certain sacrifice. Does anyone remember what that sacrifice is? Japa. Believe it or not. Japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. How does the Sanskrit go? Jagyanam Japa Yagyosmi, something like that. So that's pretty close to what we get from the Bhagavatam, that those who want to worship the avatar of this age, the Yuga avatar, will do so chiefly by the practice of Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the Holy Name. This is individual chanting of the Holy Name. Both are chanting of the Holy Name. That's real sacrifice. And the goal is nothing material. The goal is simply getting back to normal, getting back to our original state. As pure, loving servants of Krishna. That's the ultimate state. We've lost it, and we want to regain it. Completely selfless. There's nothing selfish about it. To be, you know, to aspire to be a servant, that's selfless. You know, we should all aspire like that. Okay, any other questions? Or any questions about this? Yes.
He's the first class yogi, but he does not lose his individual existence.
What does it mean?
Does it mean that he doesn't lose his individual existence?
Yes. This is the fallacy of the impersonalists. They want to lose their individual. They want to merge into the supreme Brahman and become Brahman. There's a desire to become God there, you know. So the idea is that all of our individual existences are illusory. This is their idea, that we've just been chopped off by unfortunate manifestation of avidya or ignorance. And therefore we think we're different. All of these varieties are actually illusory. That's why they say, Brahma satyam jagan mityam. Means that Brahman is the truth and jagat, all of this jagat, this universe and its varieties are false. And that when we become enlightened, avidya means ignorance, vidya means knowledge, then we will realize that we're all one. And all these varieties are illusory, and we'll be merged back into Brahman and lose that individual existence. Krishna says at the beginning of the Gita, that's false. He says, that's not true. Natvevaham jato nasam natvam nevi. He says to Arjuna, right at the beginning, in text 12, chapter 2, says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these fighters, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. And in chapter 15, he says, Mamai vanksha jiva loka jiva buddha sanatana, that the jivas in this world are my anksha, eternally. Anksha means little particles. We are like Krishna, as the rays of the sun are to the sun. They're, you know, minute, but they partake of the nature of the sun, heat and light. Each ray has that. So we have Krishna's personality. We have a form, we have activities, we have loves, you know, we have movement, we have desires, every senses, you know. Why do we have them? Because they're there in the original. Otherwise we wouldn't have it. You know, Krishna consciousness is the perfect meld of the heart and the head. It's not just speculation like the Mayavadis. It's not some emotional thing, you know, like New Age lovey-dovey stuff. It's the perfect development of love and emotion, governed or on the basis of the full understanding of reality. The original cause of everything is a person, the most beautiful, all-attractive person who has his own place, activities, friends, everything. And because he's an infinite person, and this is the most wonderful thing, he can have an intimate, loving relationship with every one of us. We are looking for that in our relationships here, but unfortunately we can't find it. We may think we find it temporarily, but it ends just by the force of time. But that relationship doesn't have to end. And the wonderful thing is we are always individuals, and so is Krishna. We will never become Krishna, and ultimately we shouldn't want to. You know? And another wonderful thing about it, this comes out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the servant of the Lord enjoys even more than the Lord. And that's why Krishna wants to become his own servant. He wants to experience, what are they experiencing? They're so blissful. I'm blissful. I'm Atmarama, no question about it. But I'm noticing that Radharani enjoys even more than I do. And all the other servants, even the expansions of Krishna, the Vishnus, you know, Krishna can expand. They also are going to become servants. Balaram, you see? So if Balaram and Mahavishnu and all the other Vishnus want to serve Krishna, who are we to say, no, I want to merge? You see the foolishness? So that's what the meaning is that we nor anyone else will ever really lose their individual existence. What we should aspire to do is to perfect our individual existence by realizing our true nature, you know, as servants of God. That's where real happiness lies. All right, let's go on. Shrotradinindriyanyanye. Sanyamagnishujuvati Shabdadin Vishayananya Indriyagnishujuvati. Some, the unadulterated brahmacharis, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control, and the others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. Purport. The members of the four divisions of human life, namely the brahmachari, the grihastha, the vanaprastha, and the sannyasi, are all meant to become perfect yogis or transcendentalists. Since human life is not meant for our enjoying sense gratification like the animals, the four orders of human life are so arranged that one may become perfect in spiritual life. The brahmacharis, or students under the care of a bona fide spiritual master, control the mind by abstaining from sense gratification. A brahmachari hears only words concerning Krishna consciousness. Hearing is the basic principle for understanding, and therefore the pure brahmachari engages fully in Hadir Namanu Kirtanam, chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. He restrains himself from the vibrations of material sounds, and his hearing is engaged in the transcendental sound vibration of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Similarly, the householders who have some license for sense gratification perform such acts with great restraint. Sex life, intoxication, and meat eating are general tendencies of human society, but a regulated householder does not indulge in unrestricted sex life and other sense gratification. Marriage on the principles of religious life is therefore current in all civilized human society, because that is the way for restricted sex life. This restricted, unattached sex life is also a kind of yajna, because the restricted householder sacrifices his general tendency towards sense gratification for a higher transcendental life. So you can see the close relationship between yajna, sacrifice, and tapasya, austerity. There's a real overlap there. Because when here he's talking about brahmacharis, shrotradinindriyanyanye, sangyamagrishu juvati. There's a lot of fires burning here. You may have noticed, metaphorical fires. So to discipline the sense of hearing is a big thing, because that's the sense of hearing is the way in which we understand the world in so many different ways. And to focus only on those sound vibrations that relate to Krishna, this is a big austerity. So it's a kind of sacrifice. You can see it. As Shukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Parikit at the beginning of the second canto, Shrota Vyadini Rajendra Ninang Santi Sahasrasha Apashatanat Matatram Griheshu Grihamedidam. For the Grihamedis, the materialistic householders, or just materialistic people in general, there's unlimited subject matters for hearing. It doesn't take a genius to see it. Just look at the internet or anywhere. And that hearing process is the prime what forms our consciousness, what we choose to hear and repeat. You can become completely degraded by certain hearing, and you can become completely exalted by other hearing. I memorized this verse some time ago. It's in the third canto, and I think it's Brahma's prayers for creative energy. At the beginning of the universe, he prays to Krishna to give him the intelligence and the energy and the detachment to create the universe as he did before, but not become too attached to his creation. And he talks there about the glories of hearing Krishna Katha. But then he says, who goes to the Vaikuntha? Who goes there? Who gets to go to Vaikuntha? So he describes that. But then he also describes who doesn't get to go, and that's what this verse is about. So he says, Yangna Vajant Agabado Vajanet Rachananavara Chinvandihena Vishayako Katamatigni Yasta Shuta Hatapagarna Badata Sadas Tang Tang Chapan Shadameshu Tamaksu Hunta. Hunta. Hunta means alas. So he says, Yangna Vajanti. Here, they do not go to Vaikuntha. Who hear other creations of sound. Rachana anuvada. Rachana means to create, and anuvada means a certain sound vibration. Anuvada, which has nothing to do with agabidha. Agabidha is Krishna who destroys all sin. He has many names. This is one of his names. Agabidho. Rachana anuvada. Chinvandiye anya vishaya. Vishaya in this sense means subject matter. And what is it called? Kukata. We know Krishna kata. Is very sweet, but this is kukata, which means bad sounds, bad talks, anything other but that doesn't deal with agabidha Krishna. And what is it? Matignihi. It destroys one's intelligence. Yastu shuta, those who hear hata bagayar are completely bereft of all good fortune. And atasadas means that the essence of life is stolen away by the sound vibration. Tang tang chapandi, those sound vibrations throw them down, ashadaneshu, with no shelter, into darkness, tamaksu, hanta, alas. You see the problem? It all comes from hearing. So this is the great fortune of all of us, is that by the efforts of our forebears, beginning with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who broke open the storehouse of love of God, and in the form of the Sankirtan movement, he spread the chanting of the holy name, sound vibration, the most empowered, condensed form, of transcendental sound is Krishna's name. And in this way, he spread the love of God everywhere. And he spoke so much, he wrote the Shikshastika, instructed his followers like the Goswamis, and they wrote voluminous literatures, right? Commentaries on the Bhagavad Purana, commentaries on the Gita, so that they would come to us as they are, potent to purify us. And now by Prabhupada's wonderful effort in providing it in English and through English in all languages of the world, it's that these vibrations are actually available everywhere. But you still have to make a choice. You can listen to this vibration or any other vibration. So by this sound vibration, we can purify our hearts. That's called Shrotana Nindyan, making a sacrifice of hearing. Not just for the brahmacharis, it's for all of us. Sabdadin Vishayananya Indriyag Nishujivadi. And if you're in the household life, fine. You still have to lead a controlled life. Otherwise, it becomes degrading. It's a danger. You have some facility for sense gratification. But if it's not an ashram, it's going to be a place where of degradation. So there has to be control. And that comes through sangha, through getting good association, and through understanding through the shastra, and becoming strong through spiritual practice. One has to become strong through spiritual practice under the guidance of realized souls. And chiefly through the chanting. Hare Krishna is mentioned right here. Okay. Any questions on this first? And we'll go on. There's more juggies to come here. Sarvanindriya Karmani. Prana Karmani Chapari. Atma Sanyama Yogagnao. Juvati Jnana Deepite. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind. Purport, the yoga system conceived by Patanjali is referred to herein. In the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali, the soul is called Pratyagatma and Paragatma. As long as the soul is attached to sense enjoyment, it is called Paragatma. But as soon as the same soul becomes detached from the sense enjoyment, from such sense enjoyment, it is called Pratyagatma. The soul is subjected to the functions of 10 kinds of air at work within the body. And this is perceived through the breathing system. The Patanjali system, the breathing system means the pranayama. The Patanjali system of yoga instructs one on how to control the functions of the body's air in a technical manner, so that ultimately all the functions of the air within become favorable for purifying the soul of material attachment. According to the yoga system, Pratyagatma is the ultimate goal. This Pratyagatma is withdrawn from activities in matter. The senses interact with the sense objects, like the ear for hearing, eyes for seeing, nose for smelling, tongue for tasting, and hand for touching, and all of them are thus engaged in activities outside the self. They are called the functions of the prana-vayu. The apana-vayu goes downwards, vyana-vayu acts to shrink and expand, samana-vayu adjusts equilibrium, udana-vayu goes upwards, and when one is enlightened, one engages all these in searching for self-realization. Hare Krishna. I'm not going to pretend to try to explain all these different vayus. I'm not sure we need to know exactly. But this word pratyagatma caught my attention. Here, pratyagatma refers to the soul detached from sense gratification. Now, pratyagatma, according to the last verse of the Sadhu Sangashtaka by Kapila Muni, also refers to the supreme soul. In the 25th chapter of the third canto, Kapila Muni, who's an incarnation of Krishna, he instructs the Sankhya Yoga system to his mother. Now, this Sankhya Yoga system culminates in bhakti. So at the very beginning of that instruction, he has these 8 verses on the importance of sadhu sangha, of association with sadhus. So I'll just summarize that, because it ends with this word pratyagatmak, which is very interesting. So the basic principle is this, is that we're attached to all the things of this world. And these attachments, there's numerous attachments. Some of them are very powerful, some of them are subordinate, but it's just like a big web, or as Krishna says in the 15th chapter, a banyan tree with unlimited roots and branches and leaves and twigs. And we entangle in this life after life. We're trying to get our way through, but the only way to really get through is to cut it at its root through the power of detachment from all of these things. But how to attain that detachment? Well, you can't just become detached. So the best strategy is to redirect the attachment. So Kapila Muni says, instead of being attached to all the things of this world and all of the materialistic people of this world, be attached to sadhus. Redirect it. Get the association and then serve and become attached. So who is a sadhu? So he said, very, very tolerant, very merciful, the friend of all. No, they have no enemies. They feel no enmity toward anyone. Self-controlled. My unalloyed devotees, they're ready to give up anything for my service. They spend their time, most of it, in hearing and chanting about my very sweet vibrations. And because of hearing and chanting all that, their material miseries don't bother them very much. You rise above them. So he said, you should find these sadhus and seek out their association. Those who are free of all material attachment. Sarva sangha vibharjita. Because by their attachment, by that sangha, by that association, one will become free of one's previous dosha or faults that have accumulated due to bad association in your previous life and in this life. Sangha dosha harahite. Now, but what will happen if you get together with the sadhus? Satam prasangam mamavirya samvido. You're going to hear conversation, you're going to hear vibrations about my powerful activities, qualities. Virya samvido. And that vibration, that description is very endearing. Rasayana. For the heart and the ear. Very pleasing. Karna Rasayana Kata. And that's yoga. Just to be in that association is a form of yoga. He says it's the easiest kind of yoga. Vijubir yoga marga. But still, one has to know where to go, and one has to associate with the sadhus and give up the other association. That's the hard part. So what happens? This is a path of liberation. An easy liberation from this world. Ashu apavarga vartmani. One develops shraddha, rati, and bhakti, step by step. Faith, attachment, and pure love for Krishna. Then he goes, by thus, asevayayam, bhakti, paman, jata, varaga, indriya, drishta, shratama, rachanana, chintaya. Here's that word, rachanana, chintaya. My activities, by thinking of my activities in this way, by practice of bhakti, one develops naturally detachment, vairagya. That's the goal, remember? The problem is we're entangled due to the attachments. We need to get free of the attachments. That's called vairagya. It comes naturally. So by that natural vairagya and knowledge developing, one can control the mind and he's fixed it on me into this easy form of yoga. And then the last verse, which has this word pratyagatma, I'm getting back to it. He says, asevayayam. Asevayayam prakate gunanan jnanena vairagya vijumbitena yogena mayapitaya cha bhaktya mam pratyagatmanam ihavarunde. So he says, by this process of not serving the modes of nature, asevayayam prakate gunanan. And how can you not serve? By developing knowledge, jnanena, vairagya, by detachment. And then bhaktya by yogena, my arpita to bhaktya, and offering everything to me with devotion, then what happens? What's the result? Mam pratyagatmanamihavarunde. One achieves me, is Kapila Dev speaking, is none different from Krishna, who am pratyagatma, the ultimate atma, the ultimate stage of the self. Ihabarunde, one attains me. Another one is one attains realization of God by this process, beginning with association with sadhus properly. So it all depends on who we associate with and how we associate. And that's a good part of our science of bhakti yoga. So that I thought that was interesting, that very word Prabhupada is explaining here, pratyagatma and paragatma. Here, pratyagatma refers to the individual soul who is transcendental. What does he say? Yes. His soul becomes detached from sense enjoyment, he's called pratyagatma. So he could also be called pratyagatma. This is the detached soul. So we should try to get that detachment. But you can't get it alone. It has to be coupled with attachment for Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Krishna's name, Krishna's service. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. That's how we can get free. Any questions on these few points? Hare Krishna. All right. So when going on with this meditation on different sacrifices. Dravya yagyastapo yagya. Yoga yagyastatapare. Svajaya gana yagyascha. Yatya sankshita vritaha. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. Purport. These sacrifices may be fitted into various divisions. There are persons who are sacrificing their possessions in the form of various kinds of charities. In India, the rich mercantile community or princely orders open various kinds of charitable institutions like Dharmashala, Annachetra, Atitishala, Anathalaya, and Vidyapita. In other countries too, there are many hospitals, old age homes, and similar charitable foundations meant for distributing food, education, and medical treatment free to the poor. All these charitable activities are called Dravyamaya Yajna. There are others who, for higher elevation in life or for promotion to higher planets within the universe, voluntarily accept many kinds of austerities such as Chandrayana and Chaturmasya. These processes entail severe vows for conducting life under certain rigid rules. For example, under the Chaturmasya vow, the candidate does not shave for 4 months during the year, July to October. He does not eat certain foods, does not eat twice in a day, or does not leave home. Such sacrifice of the comforts of life is called Tapomaya Yajna. There are still others who engage themselves in different kinds of mystic yogas, like the Patanjali system, for merging into the existence of the Absolute, or Hatha Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga for particular perfections. And some travel to all the sanctified places of pilgrimage. All these practices are called Yoga Yajna, sacrifice for a certain type of perfection in the material world. There are others who engage themselves in the studies of different Vedic literatures, specifically the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutras, or the Sankhya philosophy. All of these are called Svadhyaya Yajna, or engaging in the sacrifice of studies. All these yogis are faithfully engaged in different types of sacrifice and are seeking a higher status of life. Krishna consciousness, however, is different from these because it is the direct service of the Supreme Lord. Krishna consciousness cannot be attained by any one of the above-mentioned types of sacrifice, but can be attained only by the mercy of the Lord and his bona fide devotees. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is transcendental. So just going through these different shalas, the Anathalaya, you may know, that's for widows. It must be for the widows. I think you find that in Vrindavan, where if the husband dies and the woman can't get married. Anathalaya. For the Anatha means one without a master. Vidyapit, that's like a school. Anachetra, giving out food. Dharmashala, general place of where one can go and rest, live. And Atiti Shala. I'm not sure what the Atiti Shala is. What is it?
Guest house.
Guest house. Guest house. So these are all places where the rich mercantile community can perform charity. Charity is another kind of sacrifice. But when one is looking for that ultimate goal, then a different kind of sacrifice, as we have mentioned. Let's see. The prophet says, Krishna consciousness cannot be attained by any one of the above mentioned types of sacrifice, but can be attained only by the mercy of the Lord and his bona fide devotees. So again, it comes down to getting the right association. Otherwise, one will get an idea of performing some kind of sacrifice from whoever one's authority is. And so Srila Prabhupada, he endeavored greatly to make his own association available. Because who is he giving? He's just giving Krishna's ultimate association. You see, and so that's why these books are so important, the institution is so important. Because really, nothing should be the goal in this institution. And you won't get it from any of these books, but pure devotional service. The standard always is this verse given by Rupa Goswami, who's known to be like Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. He said, Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmandyanavata manukulena krishna nushilanam bhakti uttama. Once one understands that bhakti is the ultimate goal, then the question is, what kind of bhakti? Because that's also going to be mixed. There's karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti. But here he's giving this unalloyed bhakti uttama. So, Anyabhilashita shunyam, devoid of any other aspiration or desire. Because everything we do is moved by some aspiration or desire, some motivation. So it says no other aspiration. So jnana karma dhyanavatam. Because it's kind of covered. In other words, our real bhakti is covered by all of these motivations, covered by the modes of nature. And so it's distorted, perverted reflection, Prabhupada calls it. So the coverings come in different forms. Jnana, that shorthand for this impersonal meditation and speculation. Karma, fruit of activity of all kinds. Jnana karma janavatam, and adi, any other combination of such you may find, not covered by them. Then, okay, that's negative. Now what do you do positive? Anukulena krishna anushilanam. The key word, anukulena means favorably for Krishna's pleasure. Anukulena krishna anushilanam. For Krishna's desire, that is pure bhakti. So that's what there's not a tinge of selfish desire there, But then philosophically we understand and viscerally we experience that Krishna being the self of the self, that we are not different from Krishna. When we serve Krishna, we're really serving our real selves. This is an important philosophical understanding. This is why you can go down the street and mop the floor, you can find some restaurant, a vegetarian restaurant, and wash the pots, but you won't be satisfied. The only reason you're doing it is for the paycheck, But if you actually do it here, you do it for Krishna with no desire for remuneration, then the heart becomes there's a pleasure there, There's a spiritual pleasure. If you actually hear the holy name and you chant with some devotion, there's a pleasure. It's not a material pleasure. It's not something, you're not hearing a cinema song, you're not hearing a rock music song. It's not just from the dancing. It's because Krishna's pleased and Krishna's deep in our heart and we're not different from Krishna. So if you want to know who you really are, you have to meditate on Krishna. This is the Krishna consciousness movement. The more conscious you become of Krishna's form, his pastimes, his name, his qualities, his teachings, the more conscious you will become of who you really are. Otherwise, we're living in a dream world. We're a charade. We're acting, something we're not. That's the reality of the situation. So serving Krishna means serving oneself really, one's real self. And that's why there's an ever-increasing pleasure in it. Now we're spontaneously attracted to serving our senses, which we think are ourselves. We've been given this body. We have to reform that tendency and serve Krishna with these senses, we become really happy. Hare Krishna.